You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, brought to you by Full Sneak Gear. Check out their entire lineup at fullsneakgear.com. Also, be sure to check out our entire stable of podcasts at sportsmansempire.com. This episode of the Sportsman's Empire is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. Since 1952, Interstate Batteries has been evoking compassion and a trustworthy spirit into the surrounding communities. Interstate Batteries is a mission-driven company fueled by purpose and guided by their values. If you need help locating a specific battery, stop into your local Interstate Batteries retail store and speak with a battery specialist. They even offer cell phone repairs. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
Two Good & Co. coffee creamers are made with farm-fresh cream, real milk, and contain 3 grams of sugar per serving. That's 40% less than the 5 grams per serving in leading traditional coffee creamers for a rich, delicious experience. Whether you enjoy your coffee hot, cold, bold, or frothy, Two Good coffee creamers make every sip a good one. Two Good coffee creamers, real goodness in every sip. Find them at your local Kroger in the creamer aisle.
You saw the game-winning play once, but have to replay it 3 times on the way back to the hotel. Because some moments don't end at the buzzer. Life's a trip. Make the most of it at Best Western. Book direct and save at bestwestern.com.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the Nine Finger Chronicles podcast. I am your host, Dan Johnson, and today we're going to be talking with Jim Colbert, and he is a mentor, a hunting mentor, an outdoors mentor, a fishing mentor, and he reached out to me to talk a little bit about a program that he currently runs, but about mentorship in general when it comes to the outdoors, hunting, fishing, and outdoors in general, and how important he feels it is in order to prepare the next wave of hunters to replace the wave of hunters that seems to be going away. And he talks about time frame. He talks about questions that people ask. He talks about, I ask him questions about, you know, everybody wants to be a hunter until it comes down to killing an animal. And that's really the litmus test for if you actually it is the test if you want to be a hunter. And if people, you know, they shoot their first animal and then they're like, well, I thought I was going to like it, but I don't like it. They talk about where, you know, the interest in where meat comes from and all of this stuff. So it's a really good episode. I feel like guys like Jim, who have kind of dedicated their spare time over the course of years, really is a, it's what the hunting community needs more of. And I'm getting to a point where I'm mentoring my own children right now, but at some point they're going to be out, they're going to be on their own. And I feel like at that point, it's my responsibility to pick up another person or kid or somebody and introduce them to the outdoors so that the tradition of hunting in North America continues. And we have a voice, and we have a voice at the voting booth and things like that. So it's a really good conversation. It's in a BS style format. So there's no real bullet points. You know, if you listen to me, you know, I shoot from the hip, and that's what this conversation is like. So, huge shout out to Jim for taking time out of his day to get, hop on here and BS with us a little bit about mentorship. Now, before we get into today's episode, I got to do a real quick rundown of all of the partners that we are extremely thankful for here on the Nine Finger Chronicles. If you're looking for a saddle, go check out a Tethered. If you're looking for expandable or mechanical or expandable or fixed blade broadheads, go check out wasparchery.com, discount code NFC20. Vortex Optics, the best in the game. It's turkey season, so go put a Vortex red dot on your shotgun. Vortexoptics.com. Code Blue Sense, real and synthetic deer urine. They have mock scrape kits. They have scent elimination products. CodeBlueSense.com, discount code NFC20. Huntworth apparel and camouflage. Go to huntworthgear.com and check out all of the different camo patterns and solid patterns and layers that they have available. Reveal trail cameras. tacticam.com/cameras and check out the new 3.0 versions of the Reveal trail camera and their new mapping app that is in the Reveal trail camera app. So go check that out. And last but not least, my company, FullSneakGear.com, and check out all the t-shirts and apparel that I have there. Really badass t-shirts, especially the brand new Gobble Gobble Boom Turkey t-shirt that has been pretty popular. So FullSneakGear.com. Ladies and gentlemen, enough of the chit-chatting. Let's get into today's episode about hunting mentors. All right, everybody, welcome back to another episode of the Nine Finger Chronicles podcast. I am your host, Dan Johnson, and today we're going to continue this conversation that we had a couple weeks ago about outdoor mentors. And today's guest is do I call you James?
Call me Jim, because the only time I was called James is when I was in trouble.
Hey, that's the same. I'm Dan, but Dan, when my mom goes, Daniel, yeah. Oh, buddy, it's over. Jim Colbert, how we doing, man?
I'm doing really well. Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah. And this is going to be an interesting conversation, and it's definitely a conversation that needs to be had. The last time I talked about mentorship in the outdoors, I had a new hunter come on, but we've never had an actual mentor themselves come on. So I'm excited to ask you a ton of questions. Before we get started though, where do you live? What do you do for a living?
So my name's Jim Colbert, and I live in Ames, Iowa. What I do for a living now is I'm retired, which means I have more time to go hunting and fishing. What I did do was I was a biology professor at Iowa State for 33 years. Mm-hmm. Really loved that, but it did cut into time to go hunting.
That's right. That's right. Now, I do have to ask this question. As someone who is a lifelong Iowa Hawkeyes fan, and you work for Iowa State, I hope there's no conflict in this conversation.
There's not going to be any conflict from my end. I grew up in Cedar Rapids, so I grew up.
Okay.
And I never really became a Cyclone fan, but I certainly appreciated the paychecks.
There you go. There you go. Amen. Amen. And so as a biology professor, I honestly, when I was trying to think of what I wanted to do what do you want to be when you grow up? Like, sure. When I was a kid, I always thought that being a wildlife biologist would be an awesome thing. Right. And so you get to study and do tests and stuff like that and get in the field and do experiments. I think the word experiment is what I was the most excited about, but I never went down that path. What is it like to be a wildlife biologist or a biologist of sorts?
So I wasn't a wildlife biologist. Okay. My background is actually in plant and fungal biology. Mm-hmm. Fought a lot of people who were aspiring wildlife biologists, and some of my ex-students currently work throughout the state with the DNR or with county conservation boards and that sort of thing. What it's like to be a biologist? Awesome. The great thing about biology is you can't escape it. It's everywhere, surrounds you all the time, and when you're a biologist and you know something about the biological world, everywhere you go, you're with your friends.
Yeah, there you go. There you go. All right. You said just now that you studied fungus. Okay. Have you seen the show The Last of Us?
I have, actually.
Okay. All right. Is that reality?
And yes, I was shocked by episode 2 of the second.
Okay.
Because I'm not a gamer. So, no, it's not reality. That's not a documentary. But the thing that's really interesting about that is there are some fungi that can infect insects and basically take over their behaviors. It's really quite remarkable. The behaviors are modified in a way that maximizes the chance that the spores of the fungus will find new hosts. So it's just one more thing about biology that's absolutely incredible and amazing.
Yeah. So it's, I think the jump there from a science fiction standpoint is that this fungus then can transfer to humans and do the same thing to humans that it does to these insects.
Certainly changes their behavior on the show. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah. Right. Right. I love zombie movies for that reason that it's obviously these bloodthirsty zombies, right? But when they base it off of some sort of reality, like a virus or a fungus that's already kind of happening in the real world in other scenarios, but it just somehow makes that jump to humans. It always keeps me guessing, like, what would I do if there was a zombie apocalypse? Could I do these things?
It's a compelling question. And that's not the only example. You're probably familiar with the Aliens science fiction franchise.
Yep.
And there are little wasps that lay their eggs inside of caterpillars. And the baby wasps eat their way out of the caterpillar just like an alien.
Yep. Yep. Man, nature is so beautiful, but at the same time, so brutal.
It is unforgiving. There's no two ways about it.
That's crazy, man. That's crazy. And you know, you see those things firsthand when you're an outdoorsman, because you're in the outdoors, like watching a coyote, you know, or a pack of coyotes run down a deer, or watching here's something very interesting. I was in a tree stand and I believe one of the mother deer got hit by a car.
Yeah.
All right. This was very early season, like probably the first week of October, and the fawn, and this is what I'm assuming happened, the fawn was trying to connect with this other mother and fawn that were there. And that mother, the doe, beat this other fawn to death.
Oh, God.
You know, and I'm, what I'm getting at is it is the reality of nature is that in order to survive, you have to be the strongest version of whatever you are in order to reproduce and make your bloodline go. Like, for example, the other thing that really captivates me, and I know I'm going on a tangent here, is when there's a new king of the jungle, right? The two males fight, and the old male who's in charge, he's always been in charge, he gets defeated. Then the other male lion, he goes around and kills all the cubs.
Yeah.
And then, which forces the females to go back into estrus so he can breed them and, you know, spread his bosom.
As I used to tell my students when I taught introductory biology, most of biology boils down to two things, sex and death.
One of those is awesome. The other one sucks. Okay. Jim. All right. We're here to talk today about the pass it on outdoor mentorships. And I think I'll just start it at the highest level here. How long have you been a outdoor hunting mentor?
Well, that's a really great question. And I've actually been mentoring people for a long time, but sort of informally, I guess, you know, friends, relatives, things like that. Just over a year ago, I was at a hunter safety instructor, workshop. And that's when I learned about the Pass It On Outdoor Mentors program that Stephanie Lane, directs here in Iowa. And I thought, that sounds really interesting. So, I contacted Stephanie. So I've been working with this program for, a year now, and I've mentored folks in a number of different kinds of activities. Last summer, I took a young man and his father catfishing. I've taken mentees dove hunting, duck hunting, pheasant hunting, deer hunting, not with a bow, and turkey hunting. In fact, I have a mentored turkey hunt with a dad and daughter coming up this this coming weekend. So I think that, you know, the thing that I would say is I did not grow up in a hunting family, so I didn't have built-in mentors, and I didn't actually have a hunting mentor until I was in my early 20s, and I that was an upland bird hunter, and I became sort of hooked immediately. I thought it was just really great. So I think that part of the reason I'm interested in this is because I know how important it is to have mentors. And I realize that there's a lot of young people growing up today who were in the position that I was in when I was a young person, that, you know, they were interested in hunting, but they really didn't have anybody to show them how to do it. And so I find it really interesting and exciting to help young people learn about hunting, learn about whether it's something that they're interested in and that they want to pursue. Obviously, spending a day in the field with me is not going to teach them everything they need to know to be a good hunter. But, you know, I hope that I'm part of the process of them becoming a successful hunter during their life.
Yeah. What was it about Pass It On? Like, it's because it sounds like you've always kind of been mentoring individuals throughout the course of your life. Why did you decide to put your time and energy to an official program?
That's a really good question. I think that it's one of those things where you're like, oh man, that's really a good idea. Why haven't I realized this before? And part of the reason I hadn't realized that with the Pass It On program is it's relatively new in Iowa. I think maybe 3 or 4 years it's existed in Iowa, so it's a pretty new opportunity. But I had done similar things as well. So I've served as a mentor for the Field to Fork program. I think I've done that maybe 4 times or something, and worked with, I think it was two people each time. So it was, 8 different people who were interested in learning something about bow hunting for deer. And as I mentioned, I'm also a hunter safety instructor. So that's another aspect of trying to help mostly young people, but not necessarily. There's certainly adult onset hunters too, who have decided for, you know, some reason that they want to learn something about hunting. And I think it's great. I know that some people are concerned. They're like, oh, you know, we don't want any more hunters. We can't find places to hunt now. But I guess my attitude is the more people who are interested in hunting, the more motivation there's going to be to, you know, provide opportunities, particularly public hunting opportunities for hunters. And I think that's, you know, without getting too political here, I think that's something the state of Iowa could really use some improvement on, is providing access to the outdoors for the public.
Yeah. And that's something that I personally talk a lot about on this podcast, is with Iowa being 2% or less public land, and Iowa also being a state where there is heavy focus on antler size.
Yeah.
It is, we have a lot of non-residents coming into the state in certain parts of the state, buying up land and displacing local hunters throughout the state. And so those people have to go somewhere, or they don't hunt or fish at all. Or, well, fishing's a different, little bit different of a story.
I think that, you know, part of what I see when I'm working with with young or and or aspiring hunters, you know, I think the two most common concerns or questions that they have boil down to, number one, where do I hunt? Mm-hmm. You know, a place to hunt is absolutely essential and difficult to define. And number two, what the heck would I do if I actually got one? Mm-hmm. I mean, those are two really fundamental questions. And at least at this point, the state of Iowa is not doing a great job at trying to fill that need. I mean, I'm not saying anything bad about the Department of Natural Resources. I think that they do a wonderful job with the limited resources that they have. What I would argue is they really should have more resources.
Yeah, absolutely. And in this day and age, it seems like budgets are always shrinking and, yep. You know, and so, you know, you say what you want about all of that stuff, but budgets have always been shrinking for the Department of Natural Resources. Like even 10 years ago, 15, 20 years ago, I just keep hearing, oh yeah, they're reducing our budgets. They're reducing our budgets. And so it's a miracle that the Department of Natural Resources on the law enforcement side and on the conservation side are even, they even exist at all. And they're doing what they're doing. It's pretty much a miracle, if you ask me.
It really is remarkable. They're able to do as good of a job as they can. And, you know, people say, well, you can't fix problems by throwing money at them. But you know what's really true? You definitely can't fix problems by not throwing money.
Exactly. Exactly. And I would argue that if it's enough money, you can solve any problem. So
that's true.
So when it comes to kind of like a mentor, right? Who are, in your opinion, I know this is going to be a high level question, but who are the type of people, what is the demographic that comes to you guys and is seeking mentorship?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, I think that, I guess I would say it depends a lot on the program. Field of Fork, as you might know, is not focused on young people. I think you have to be 21 years old to participate in Field of Fork. So that's really focused on hunters who are, older aspiring hunters.
Yeah, late onset, right?
Yeah. Of the hunters I've worked with, I think 3/4 of them, 6 of the 8, had never hunted anything before. The other 2 had done some hunting, but had never done any bow hunting. And that's the essential part of the Field of Fork program. You have to be a novice bow hunter for deer. But what I want to focus on is six of these folks hadn't, you know, shot a squirrel with a 410 or been pheasant hunting or done anything. And so why were they doing it? I think that there were a couple things that, at least my observation, a couple things that were driving it. One was they really wanted to have more of a connection to the meat that they were eating. You know, they wanted to participate in that as opposed to just outsourcing it to, you know, some industrial setting. And so that's one big component. The other component is they simply wanted to do what you were describing earlier, spend time in nature, being there, seeing whatever is going on, whatever's happening, and, you know, participate directly in that outdoor world as opposed to, I don't know, watching it on television or something.
Right, right.
So that was, you know, that's the demographic for the Field of Fork program. For the Pass It On Outdoor Mentors program, that really is focused on younger people. And I guess my experience has been the young people have an interest in hunting or fishing. They maybe have done a little with one of their parents, typically their father, And they want to learn to do more. Sometimes the parent themselves they're really looking for help because they don't know how to do this. Sometimes it's not that they haven't been hunting at all. It's that they haven't done that kind of hunting. Mm-hmm. And I think that, you know, basically they're looking for help. The parents are looking for help because they have this child who is interested and they're not quite sure how to help them. And so I think I would say that's mostly the demographic that I've experienced in the Outdoor Mentors program.
Which makes sense. You know, if there is a child or a younger individual who doesn't come from a hunting family and had like all of it, maybe it's a buddy, like a friend who's like, yeah, dude, I love hunting. And they're like, well, that sounds interesting to me. And then they talk to their parents, like, I want to hunt. And the parents are like, well, I don't know how to hunt.
Exactly.
Well, let's go figure it out together. Right. And so do you often see like a father, son, father, daughter combo that comes into this program?
Right. That has been my typical experience. And this is for excellent reason. Young hunters have to have a parent or guardian with them, and that makes great sense for everybody. So I've mostly worked with fathers and sons, but I do have a father-daughter group that I'm going to be taking out turkey hunting this coming. And I just think that's just great. I mean, I really think that young women getting involved in hunting is really valuable, really important.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. As a mentor, and this is actually a problem that sometimes I have, I host another podcast called the How to Hunt Deer podcast. Okay. And it's basically a lot of instruction and tutorials towards how to hunt deer. Right. And I've been hunting deer now for over 20 years. And so I am educated. I have tons of experience. And one of my problems is I don't dumb it down enough sometimes for the listener or the new hunter. Is it hard to communicate at times as someone who is as experienced as yourself to start from scratch with someone, educating them about, I don't know, wild turkey or pheasants, or just like, don't touch that plant because you will itch for days type of thing?
Yeah, that's there's definitely some value in knowing the neighbors and which ones to stay away from.
Right.
But that's really a great question. And I'm sure that, you know, anybody who is, you know, trying to help somebody learn to do something that's difficult that they're good at is going to struggle with the question that you're putting forward. You know, what are the really critical things I need to help this person understand? What are details that I can, you know, leave for the future or that they can discover on their own in the future? I don't know that I have a good answer for your question. I'm sure that sometimes I go overboard as well. But I guess I'll say that in my case, my career was being a teacher. And so I've spent a lot of time thinking about, well, how do you help people get an entree into this particular body of knowledge, whatever it is? Obviously, there's always more to learn. I mean, you know, you're a really accomplished, really good deer hunter, but I'm sure that you still feel that you learn things
every year
go along. So it can be really challenging to figure out what are the entry points? What are the best ways to help a person begin to understand, the ins and outs and the critical aspects of a particular activity. When it's hunting, of course, that's also layered over a safety component, which is really yeah. So I guess I would say that, you know, that's where I start, is, you know, understanding something about what the person's experience is. I haven't done any in-person mentoring with bows. The field to fork stuff, you're not actually out hunting with them. You're helping them set things up and all that sort of stuff, putting up tree stands and answering questions and so forth. But with the Outdoor Mentors program, you know, step one is, you know, what is your experience with firearms? You know, I mean, you know, have you, you know, are you a trap and skeet shooter, or is this the first time you're picking up a firearm? So there's a, you know, certain amount of that that's got to happen. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, there's a lot of discussion about
this time of year. You're going to find me jigging for crappies off my father-in-law's boat, celebrating a successful turkey hunt, or just sitting on the back deck watching time go by with a quality cigar from Thompson Cigar. Thompson Cigar has been around since 1915, offering the widest array of cigars and cigar accessories at very affordable prices. Thompson Cigar offers your favorite brands like Swisher Sweets, Cohiba, Backwoods, and Monte Cristo shipped fresh directly to your door. Also, be sure to check out their 5-pack fever deals and join their value club for big savings. Visit thompsoncigar.com and enter the discount code SE at checkout for 20% off of all orders over $75. Thompson Cigar, quality cigars at affordable prices.
Out, you know, what are the behaviors and preferences of the species that you're, you know, that you're trying? Where are you going to look for them? Why are you looking here? I was out with a hunter last weekend, an 11-year-old young man and his father. And we talked quite a lot about, you know, why I had chosen the particular spot to hunt turkeys that I had chosen. And I, you know, pointed out that, you know, we were facing west, so the sun was behind us, not shining in our face. Mm-hmm. We were on a ridgetop, and there was kind of a narrow point, you know, a funnel that, you know, that would help get turkeys into the area that we might be able to get a shot at them. So I don't know. Was that too much information?
No, that's great, because it spawned some other questions that I want to ask here. And that is, when you have somebody come in to a program, a mentorship program like this, who has never been around guns. Yeah. Okay. So I'm from a family where there was guns around all the time, and yeah. we were educated very early about, if you pull this trigger, it's going to go bang, and it's going to do damage to whatever's on the other end of it. Right. And so have you ever had an example of somebody coming into a program and using guns for the first time and basically not, like, being very uncomfortable around that? What's that like?
Well, so that is a great question. And so far I have been fortunate that I have never had any mentee that had zero experience with guns.
Okay.
Yes, I would be pretty uncomfortable with that. I mean, I think I could, well, actually, that's not even true. Sorry, let me back up a second. I'm trying to remember my own life here, Dan. So near the end of my career at Iowa State, I was the club advisor for the Iowa State Hunting Club. And I actually did, as part of some group pheasant hunts, work with some individuals who it was the first time they were shooting a gun. And I certainly watched them very carefully. You know, we talked a lot about how their particular firearm operated. I think in both of those cases, they were borrowing one of my shotguns, and, you know, I had them shoot it a couple times and so forth. But I don't think either one of them ever fired a shot while we were actually out. But Yeah, obviously bad things can happen, and you know, you want to keep that safety component really in mind. It's a little stressful, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
But I guess in my mind, I feel like it's worth the stress because I'm helping somebody learn how to do something that they want to learn how to do and that I really love.
Right. Right. Now I want to talk about the act of killing an animal. Okay. Right. And so that's okay. Backing up just a second. I know what you mean by stressful with a firearm, because I took my oldest son turkey hunting this, yep, you know, during youth season, and I'm trying to get him to be able to hold the gun when we walk through the woods. I got a sling on it, shoulder sling for him, and walk through the woods. And I had to continuously remind him throughout the entire day, don't point your barrel there. Don't point your barrel there. You know, get your barrel out of the dirt. You know, like, don't point the barrel. Like, you swung it in front of me. You got to stop doing that. And so it's just continuous, just reminding them, especially when they're 9 years old, you know. So
I say, your son is nine?
Yep. Nine. Yep.
That's awesome. See, your son's growing up right. He's got the right dad. He gets to grow up in a hunting family.
Yeah. His dad might be a bit of an asshole, but he still grows up in a hunting family. So, but now, like, to the act of killing an animal, which even for me growing up, I grew up on a farm, so I was a little bit desensitized by the whole killing an animal thing. But I did kind of go through a phase when I was younger where if it was wild, I had a problem with killing it. Like, I can remember, my uncle was like, hey, you want to come pheasant hunting with me? And then you see this beautiful bird and you shoot it and you're like, oh, why did I do that?
Yeah.
But you know, I got past that. Yep. Do you have any, like, what's that conversation like with someone who has never taken the life of an animal before, and telling them, like, the second you pull this trigger or let that arrow go, it's over for this animal?
Yep. It's a really crucial point. I think that I start out with, you know, trying to be very clear with them that, you know, when they pull the trigger, there's really three things that can happen. You can miss, you can kill it, you can wound it and lose it. Mm. And by far the worst of those is the last one. Yep. I also, you know, definitely try to help them understand that, they've been, I mean, assuming that they eat an omnivore diet, that they're not, you know, a strictly plant-based, diet, they've been eating animals all their life. Mm-hmm. And just because they didn't kill doesn't mean the animal didn't die, right? I mean, the chicken died, the turkey died, the cow died, the pig died. So I try to put it in that context. I'm trying to think, relatively few of my mentees have actually killed anything. And I think in a lot of ways that's good. They're having the experience, they're learning some things. And one of the things they're learning is this isn't easy, that this is, you know, going to the grocery store and picking a chicken breast out of the cooler. But I have had a couple of hunters that did kill something. The one I'm thinking of in particular, we were squirrel hunting, which I guess I left off my list, but, he didn't seem upset. He seemed more really fascinated, really interested that, you know, that it had worked. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, of course I had him help me. He actually got two squirrels that day. I had him help me, you know, clean the squirrels and so forth and send him home with a recipe. Another young man, who shot a pheasant, And, you know, he was, I mean, I don't know what was going on the inside. Maybe there was a lot of regret going on the inside, but it wasn't coming out on the outside. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think that in the end, as much joy you might have in your success, you actually shot a pheasant or a turkey or a deer or whatever, I think all of us feel some regret, and mm-hmm. we should feel some regret. I mean, you know, but again, and this comes back to being a biologist, and it comes back to your comments earlier about how harsh nature can be. If you're going to live, something's going to die. I mean, there's just no two ways about it. Yeah. And you can make some choices about what's going to die. But even if you have a strictly plant-based diet, there are animals dying. There are animals dying when you plow the field. There's animals dying when the truck carrying the carrots goes down the highway and runs into a deer. I mean, it's unavoidable. Mm-hmm. Life causes death.
Yeah. Yeah. I can remember, so the first deer that I shot when I was like with a bow, first I can remember it like it was yesterday, right? Yep, yep. I shot it and it ran away. And yep. So I didn't get to see it die.
Right.
But then, and you're like, you celebrate that. Oh my God. Then you go find a deer. It's already dead. And then you do what you do with it, right? But there was a time when I can remember it was one of my first times that I double lunged him and he just hunched up and he started walking real slowly. And it was a gruesome, and what I mean gruesome, I mean like lots of blood, right, hacking and coughing. 'Cause I just put an arrow through his lungs, nose, like right, bleeding out of his nose and mouth, and just very gruesome. And that was an eye opener for me. That's like, whether you see it or you don't see it, that is happening.
Yep.
Right. And so that's the reality. And I think that it's the moments like that where you visually watch an animal die can keep some people from wanting to be a hunter.
Yeah. I think that's true. I mean, it's the reality is harsh. Mm-hmm. There's no two ways about it.
Yeah.
And some people don't want to, directly experience that. And so they make the choice to have other people kill their meat for them, or they make the choice to not eat meat. And, you know, I respect all those choices. Mm-hmm. Personally, I really like being an active part of the reality of the biological world.
Yeah, the food chain, so to speak, right?
Yep.
Yep. In your opinion, how long do you feel a new hunter or new outdoorsman needs to be mentored in order for them to then become an individual, I guess, what's the word I'm looking for? An individual returning and active member of the hunting space.
Years.
Yeah.
One day is not enough by any stretch of imagination. So I have a grandson who's not much older than your son. He's 12. And I've been mentoring him in hunting and fishing since he was, I don't know, probably 6 or 7.
Yeah.
He's, I would say, still not to the point where, you know, he could hunt independently, but he's made a ton of progress and he's close to being able to do that. But literally years, many outings, many experiences. I mean, as you well know, Dan, this is such a challenging, such a complex endeavor. I mean, everything from being sure you don't fall out of your tree stand to dressing correctly for the for the weather.
Absolutely.
I mean, there's just so many things that could go wrong. So many things to learn. Mm-hmm. And it's so nice to have, you know, somebody who knows more, you know, help you through those steps. But I would say it literally takes years for a person to go from the point where they've never hunted before to the point where they could head out on their own and be safe, be legal, be ethical, and be competent and to know what to do and to know everything from, you know, the very beginning of getting their gear ready to being able to process the animal that they brought home. It's a long, long journey.
Right. Yeah, I couldn't agree more. All right, let's talk a little bit about someone is very interested in, I want to ask this in two ways.
Sure.
One would be someone's very interested, has no experience in the outdoors. What is the best, in your opinion, and maybe if you just want to use Iowa as an example, what is the best activity and or species to go after in order to get someone's foot in the door?
For hunting.
For hunting, yeah.
In particular. Yep. Yeah, that's a super question. And I think that, you know, part of it comes back to the safety aspect of it. And so the kinds of hunting where it's more determined what direction you're going to be shooting, it really matters. And so I would say that, you know, really one of the best entry points into hunting is something like squirrel hunting, where you're sitting quietly, and you're watching and you're waiting for the squirrels to come to you. If you want to upscale it to deer hunting, that's fine too. Because again, you're going to be sitting, you're going to have sort of a window of, okay, you know, here's where you can be able to see the animal to be able to shoot it. It's, I think, much safer. I think it's much easier for the mentor to work with the person and say, okay, that deer is out of range. It's not time to shoot yet. Be patient. It's turned the wrong way. Be patient. It's too dark. Don't take that shot. You know, all of those kind of things. The thing that's interesting to me is a lot of people end up starting out pheasant hunting because pheasant hunting is so popular in Iowa. And I would say that's one of the more difficult kinds of hunting.
Oh, yeah.
To take a new person because it's so unpredictable, right? You don't know where that rooster is going to come up. Hang on, my dog's whining here. Sorry.
That happens.
Right. It's going to ruin the whole show. So, you know, I mean, that pheasant might fly behind you. I mean, you just don't know what's going to happen. It's so unpredictable and uncontrolled. So I would say that pheasant hunting is one of the, or duck hunting can be that way too. You know, one of the probably least good choices for how you take a person who's never hunted before, who has very little experience, and give them a hunting experience. Turkeys would be okay too, but turkeys are just so annoying that, you know, Dan, most things I hunt for fun and for food, but turkeys I hunt for revenge.
What did they do to you?
They made me look stupid.
Oh, yeah. Right. Right. So it's very spiteful and vengeful for you to go turkey hunting.
Anyway, that'd be my answer to your question. And it would really depend a little bit on, you know, what you had access to in terms of, places to go and what the person was interested in.
Yeah. This next question. So in Iowa, man, we have so little public ground and we have we're looking for, you know, you mentioned the two questions, where do I hunt? And what do I do if I kill something, right? So the where do you hunt bullet point here is how would you recommend a new hunter goes to try and find property to hunt?
Yeah. Obviously, great question, and one that I still deal with myself.
Yep.
on a daily basis. I mentioned that I'm a hunter safety instructor, and one of the sessions that I lead basically has to do with it in my local hunter safety class, basically has to do with that very point. You know, what are, I've got my hunter safety number, I can buy a license, you know, what do I do next? And in some ways we are.
Close your eyes, exhale, feel your body relax, and let go of whatever you're carrying today.
Well, I'm letting go of the worry that I wouldn't get my new contacts in time for this class. I got them delivered free from 1-800-CONTACTS. Oh my gosh, they're so fast.
And breathe.
Oh, sorry. I almost couldn't breathe when I saw the discount they gave me on my first order. Oh, sorry. Namaste.
Visit 1-800-CONTACTS.com today to save on your first order.
1-800-CONTACTS.
In some ways, we're living in a golden age in the sense that we have online resources that, you know, were absolutely unthought of when I was starting to hunt. I mean, we thought the high end of technology was having countywide plat maps that
oh yeah,
showed us who owned particular pieces of land. Here in Iowa, as I know you're aware, the DNR has an interactive hunting atlas. When I teach the hunter safety section on this, I actually show them the interactive hunting atlas and you know, zoom in on some spots that are close to Ames where we're teaching the class, and pose questions like, well, gee, what kind of animals would you hunt here? And, you know, the point being, gosh, is this a pond or a wetland, or is it a grassy area, or is it a forest? You know, those kinds of things. So there's so much that can be done today, you know, to look at maps that are available online, either freely available like the DNR Interactive Hunting Atlas, or that you can pay for access to like OnX, that really can help you identify where are pieces of public land that meet the kind of interests I have. Am I thinking about hunting turkeys, or am I thinking about hunting pheasants or ducks or whatever it might be? And that's great, but there's no substitute for boots on the ground, because, you know, you don't know when those satellite images were taken. Things may have changed. Last year, there may have been plenty of water in that wetland, but this year there isn't any. So the other part is actually getting out and scouting those areas, which of course is, you know, I mean, I'm a terrible example now. I'm an old retired guy, so I have time to do that. And in fact, my hunting buddies expect me to send them scouting reports. They're like, Jim, you're old and you have nothing else to do. You should tell us what's going on in these spots. I think that's really the case. Yep. Private land. I don't hunt very much private land. I hate to tell you this, Dan, but I'm not really much of a deer hunter. I have bow hunted for deer. I've successfully bow hunted for deer, but these days, pretty much all I do is early muzzleloader deer season. I love to eat deer, but I prefer to hunt upland birds and ducks. And deer hunting cuts into that too much. But I do hunt deer on some private land, but getting access to private land is challenging. I mean, unless, as you alluded to earlier, you have buckets and buckets of money and you just want to purchase or lease hunting land.
Right.
You know, it mostly boils down to, you know, you're probably going to be successful if you're talking to family or friends. And if you're trying to get permission to hunt other areas, it's a pretty low probability event. I'm not saying you can't do it. I'm not saying that things like Onyx aren't helpful, that you could, you know, figure out who the landowners are and so forth. But things are very different today than they were in the past. I mean, there's a lot of land where the landowners don't live anywhere near that piece of property. Trying to figure out how to contact them or who to ask permission of can be really challenging. And so that's one of the frustrations about hunting in Iowa. 98% of the land is in public, or sorry, excuse me, private ownership. Mm-hmm. And it can be really difficult to get permission to hunt on private land.
Yep. 100%. Kind of a twist to that same question is, like, what would you say to landowners who have never let, or like they've never let a new hunter or any other hunters come on their property? And it's almost like you've worked your entire life to buy this farm, right? And you've done all of, you know, you've put your blood, sweat, and tears into acquiring this land. Maybe it's just to own. Maybe it's specifically for hunting. Why is it important to continue to share that land if you've never have shared it before?
I mean, I get it. I mean, you never know what you're getting with some person that you don't know well. And if that person also happens to be holding a gun, mm-hmm. I can see that that would be really uncomfortable. I've never owned any land. I chose the wrong parents. And so, so I can't speak from personal experience. I'm sure that it's difficult. And, you know, obviously landowners may have commitments to relatives or friends or something that, you know, they've agreed to let them hunt. So, I get it. One of the things that I've been really happy about is the Iowa DNR IHAP program, the Iowa Habitat Access. Mm-hmm. In a state like Iowa that has so much land in private ownership, some of that land is spoken for hunting wise. Some of that land is owned by people who would never let anybody hunt. And some of that land is by people who really don't care, but they're hard to identify and hard to find. So the IHAP program, you know, takes some of that private land, does some habitat management on it, and then, you know, public access for hunting is allowed. The problem with the program is it's way too small. I mean, it's, I think, 30,000 acres or something statewide. It's a program that I would like to see really expanded. I'm sure there are people who would be happy to participate that could be identified. But again, it's a resource issue. I mean, it takes money to be able to do the habitat management that is the carrot for the landowner to allow public access.
Yeah. Like the walk-in programs that you see in other states.
Right. And there are big walk-in programs in some of our neighboring states, mm-hmm. Nebraska, for instance, South Dakota too.
Yep.
We have a program. It's just really small. In my opinion,
right.
In comparison to the need, that's there. So I encourage the DNR to continue that program and hopefully find the resources to expand it.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. When it comes to becoming a mentor, right? So like I am in a stage of my life where I've shot a lot of turkeys. You know, I'm actually in the process of mentoring my children right now. Like we did turkey seasons, right? But maybe in 15 years, when they're out the door and right. I no longer am mentoring my own children, maybe it's time for me to pass that on. What would you say to another experienced hunter who has the knowledge but has never mentored anybody before to maybe consider being a mentor?
Yeah, that really truly is a great point. And you know, it's like anything, it's probably not for everybody. I mean, mm-hmm. certain people who maybe that wouldn't be a good fit for. But I think that part of it is to think back on your life, and there were people who helped you. There were people who, you know, when it might be family, might be friends, whoever. So in a sense, you sort of owe it to the next generation of hunters. You were helped. In some ways, you owe it to help the next generation. Yeah. But I think that the more positive spin on it is, it's really fun.
Yeah, there it is.
You know, like you, I've shot turkeys and deer and pheasants and whatever. And, you know, I mean, I still love doing it. And in our home, my wife and I eat almost exclusively wild game. Not quite. But almost exclusively wild game. And so it's not like I, you know, don't care anymore about whether I can, you know, bring some pheasants home for dinner. I do. But at this point, I really think it's actually more fun to watch, an aspiring young hunter be able to get their first, you know, whatever. And, it sort of brings back what it felt like to me when I, you know, the first time I was successful shooting a rough grouse, or the first time I was successful shooting a deer, or right. which obviously I never get to do again. Right. I mean, I've done it, you know, mm-hmm. it happened for me again, but I can help somebody else have that experience. And that I find really, really fun. Yeah. I also find fun the incidental aspects of it. Again, I'm a biologist and have a reasonable knowledge of Iowa's biodiversity. It's fun to share some of that too, you know, to point out different species and tell stories about, you know, what they do, where they're from, including my least favorite Iowa species, Multiflora rose.
Oh, buddy, let's not get started. You know what? I was thinking about that the other day when I was walking through the timber. What plant species do I hate the most?
Yeah.
And it was a tie between poison oak, poison ivy, and multiflora rose. Those have caused me the most trouble over the years.
So multiflora rose, as you may or may not know, is not native to Iowa.
Yep.
It was introduced into Iowa on purpose. Yep. And the notion was is it would be a really great hedgerow plant, and the reality is it turns out it likes to grow everywhere.
All right.
And yeah, I've got scars on my hands right now from multiflora rose. Nasty, heck, nasty stuff.
Yep. Well, Jim, man, I really appreciate your time today. Great conversation on mentorship. I know we could continue this for, you know, a lot of hours yet. If people want to find out more about the Pass It On Outdoor Mentor Program, like, where do we send them?
Okay, so that's easy. Just Google Pass It On Outdoor Mentors, and what they'll find is a couple different things. There's a homepage that's sort of like the umbrella for all of it that has all the states. And then, and it's only in a few states. You'd have to ask Stephanie Lane exactly which ones, but it's not in all 50 states. Mm-hmm. Iowa's a relatively recent addition, but you can find the Iowa information on that website as well. So just Google Pass It On Outdoor Mentors, and you will get access to their website and learn about their program and their mission and all that sort of stuff. And I would certainly encourage people like us, you know, who have experience, and maybe people like me who's not trying to mentor their own children.
Yep.
Right. There's only so much time you have. to think seriously about it, because hunters are a minority, a small minority. 5 to 7% of the people in Iowa have hunting licenses. We need to, proactive at recruiting people. And there's probably a lot of young kids out there and adults who have an interest in hunting, but really don't know where to start. And right. You can help them start.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'll just elaborate a little bit on that where, man, I feel like the best place to go as far as a resource is concerned is Google, right? Yeah. If you're interesting in looking for a mentor to go duck hunting or pheasant mm-hmm. hunting, I am almost positive that if you find the right group of people, someone will offer to take you hunting.
Yep,
if you do it. Now, if you're looking for giant, big racked bucks, I don't think so many people, because everybody's looking for those, right?
I judge deer on whether they have back straps or not.
There you go. So you're batting 100 then.
Yeah, betting 100.
There you go. Hey, Jim, man, I really appreciate your time. Thank you for hopping on today. And good luck with whatever you're doing as far as mentorship in the future.
All right, great, Dan.
My dad taught me a lot, including how easy it is to forget to cancel things. So I downloaded Experian, my BFF, big financial friend. Experian could help me cancel my unused subscriptions and lower my bills, saving me hundreds a year. Get started with the Experian app today. Your big financial friend's here to help you save smarter. Results will vary. Not all bills or subscriptions eligible. Savings not guaranteed. $631 a year. Average savings with one plus negotiations and one plus cancellations. Paid membership with connected payment account required. See Experian.com for details.
Nice to talk with you.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.